And we are back with episode 630 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and oh, you Moonves assassin of Trek.
I don't know what's worse, your accent or the fact that I got it. This is Gary from Jacksonville, and yes, we have some exciting space news that I'm very happy about.
Yes, I'm still reeling from the accent. Anyway, we are going to be talking about quite a bit of genre news this week, and quite a bit of it is space-based, which is nice. But before we do any of that, Edmund, hopefully you can give us a little bit of a disclaimer.
Certainly. We will be giving you the news. We hope you will be delighted and spoiled silly by it. And if we should get to any episodic content, we will spoil you silly with all the stuff you haven't seen yet, if you haven't seen it.
That's right. About as succinct as we can get on that kind of thing. So first, we're going to start off with this little bit of news that I don't think has been attached to any particular network yet, but it is a reboot of sorts.
Yes, I would say so. This is news that The Greatest American Hero will be heading back to our TV screens. This is apparently it is Fox has given a pilot production commitment to a revival of the 1980s comedy drama. It will be written by Rick Fumayawa, who made Dope, produced by the guys who brought us the Lego Movie, and of course is bringing back the series from that debuted back in 81, created by the ubiquitous at the time, Stephen J. Cannell. His fingerprints were all over, of course, many, many series all throughout the 80s.
Didn't NBC sell him Thursday night for several years?
Pretty much, yes. Things like Magnum P.I. and the A-Team and those sorts of things, and many others along the way. We will see. I know, as we were discussing before we went on the air, it's actually not a series that I was really up on during that period in the 80s, but I know it is greatly beloved by some, was certainly a very quirky premise of a regular guy getting a alien suit that gives him superpowers that he, of course, immediately loses the directions to, but since he's a guy, he probably wouldn't have read the manual anyway. So naturally, all sorts of hijinks ensue, since it was most definitely a comedy drama, what are they calling that now? Dramedy, I believe. We will see if a more tongue-in-cheek genre offering might make its way to a successful reboot.
Well, I don't know whether to believe it or not, but I'll take your word for it.
One of us got that.
I was trying.
I got that reference.
Okay. Maybe it's just me. I don't
know. Believe it or not, it's not just you. Well, Gary, I don't think you're going to be the only one who enjoys this next bit of news.
Oh, yeah. Talk about an early anniversary present. It was announced by, I guess it technically is CBS, that they are going to be rolling out a new Star Trek series starting in January of 2017. There's a little confusion about how it's going to be presented, and the way I understand it is that it will make its first run on air, so to speak, but then after that, everything is going to be in a pay-per-view model online, which has raised the ire of many a fan who, I guess, expects it ubiquitously for free or near free the way that we've been enjoying the last several seasons of every other Star Trek series that has been on the air. But, they're trying to make money with it, and we're looking forward to it. There are literally no details about the show whatsoever. Time frames, characters, ships, space stations. We don't know anything yet. I was a little surprised at the timing of it, given that I thought they would sort of wait a little bit longer till they hit the 50th anniversary to announce it. But I guess they did want to start getting things in order. It's interesting. A lot of people have been dying for new Trek, and not movie Trek per se, but actually TV Trek. There's a variety of different level skill sets of fan productions that are continuing to make inroads in the Star Trek universe since the television format has been abandoned by CBS or Paramount or whichever studio name you'd like to insert there. So I guess they're seeing that there is a desire for it, and of course they see a way to make money doing it through rolling it into a pay-per-view model as well. So I'm looking forward to it. The pricing for the paper model isn't that much. I believe it's set somewhere around $8 to $9 a month. So that's about $2 an episode if they do one a week. So I don't feel they're trying to really take us over the coals with it, but it is, again, this developing model on how to deliver content. So I know I'll pay that amount, and I have high hopes that it will be a good series. And unlike many people, it does not have to be a Kirk, Spock, McCoy type of Enterprise venture to be successful. We've seen them do great jobs with other sections of the Star Trek universe, and I actually do hope they go in a slightly new direction. And given that they probably don't want the movie tramped on or used that much to maintain that property, I'm guessing that's it's going to go in some other direction. Were you guys thrilled, excited, scratching your heads? What were some of your thoughts when you heard this news?
Oh, I can only speak for myself that I was a little bit surprised that they were going to use this to launch this or further launch their online venture here. I don't know if this is their way of kind of saying, well, we're not getting enough people buying subscriptions to CBS All Access, so let's find the one property we're pretty sure we're going to get millions of people to start buying subscriptions for our service for. I hate to tell them that more than likely there's going to be quite a lot of pirating going on, but okay. Regardless, I am reminded of the fact that there was another company that tried to do something along these lines, or at least kind of get an online streaming service off the ground. I think it might have been Warner Brothers. And there was this other show that they were going to supposedly use as their kind of flagship for this. And I think it's kind of ironic that CBS is going in this direction and actually seems to be successfully doing so.
Well, I don't think, and what you're referring to is the mentions by J. Michael Straczynski about Babylon 5 being this sort of flagship station. And while I'm not denying it's true or that he said it, it never from what I know, it never really went past the talk idea, because no information other than what he's reported has ever come out. So I imagine it never went to this level that they're making the public announcement to set it up. So, but you have some valid points. This is in some ways still a fledgling market, although you do have Netflix and even Amazon services bringing new content. And the major networks have only partnered with them to date. This is a major network's first real spinoff to try and do this. So I don't fault them for trying it, and I don't mind them trying to do it with a slam dunk property like Star Trek. As you said, it's going to bring in, even with pirating, still several million viewers, I'm sure. So, no, I think it's a smart move. If this helps to cushion the financial costs so that they actually do present present new shows and that we get a decent length of a season, I'm all for that too. So I'm a little bit more optimistic, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, I certainly want it to succeed. But anyway, Edmund.
Yeah, I would say, obviously, I'm very happy to see Trek returning to TV. My reservation does revolve around the CBS All Access aspect of it. Certainly, Netflix and Amazon have been very successful in their streaming efforts, but there are also companies that are really focusing on that. And my hope is, given what I've seen in terms of some comments out there about the quality or lack of, or the haphazard quality of CBS All Access is streaming at the moment, especially with the sort of volume and hit that they're going to take. If they're using this as an opportunity to beef up their servers and capacity and give us a service that is actually going to be able to handle the amount of traffic, then I'm perfectly happy about it. But I've seen enough complaints about CBS's streaming options not being too stellar that at the moment is actually my biggest reservation. That I certainly don't have any problem with them using this to try and bolster the service, so long as they actually do in fact deliver a premium service to go with the premium show. I know you mentioned Hulu, John, and I haven't been on there recently, but I remember when that first launched, trying to watch episodes of it's just a call back a few years of The Event, I think, and Terra Nova, and just finding that with I remember an episode of The Event where I could, the sound would not sync up with the audio no matter what I tried. This is on a broadband connection, with a good computer, as I was able to stream certainly plenty of other stuff. That is the part that I just really hope they get right, because they could really wind up shooting themselves in the foot if everybody's trying to get on and all of our streams just keep crashing.
Well, the other part that I'm a little bit worried about here is that what kind of, not necessarily production values, because I'm sure they're going to put some money behind this, but what kind of commitment are we looking at here? How easy is it going to be for them to pull the plug? Is it going to be a limited series type thing where they go in with a certain number of episodes in mind and that's all there is to it? Or is it going to be more of an open thing like that your typical Star Trek series was and, you know, have discrete episodic type of stuff going on? I'm just a little bit concerned that we're going to wind up having a situation where it's very disposable, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I know what you're saying, and don't get me wrong, I'd love them to give us a 7-season commitment at the first episode. But at the same time, you know, it is television, and you want it to have good expectations, and you want everyone to be accountable for the show. So, I mean, it'd be nice to, you know, have some sort of larger commitment, but if what's coming out isn't good, do we really want that?
I think more along the lines of, you know, even if it's – I'm not looking for – a commitment like what you're talking about, but at the same time, I feel like in many cases, maybe this is just my lack of faith with online distribution model still to this day, is that I'm worried that it would just be seen as something that they dump it out there and then that's it. How are they going to measure success? Is it going to be that they have like millions of dollars in new subscriptions and that's the only way that it's going to... You get my point, is that there's no easy way for us to gauge as an audience whether or not we're supporting it enough. Until it may be too late. And I'm just, I guess, wary of the fact, too, that, you know, I don't necessarily feel like if we were waiting for another Trek series, there's plenty of support out there for it to be on a traditional model. I feel like this is almost a I know that, like you said, Netflix, Edmund, you, mm-hmm. you were saying, and Amazon, yeah, they'd have a certain cachet. These other distribution outlets don't have that yet. And I'm just somewhat concerned that this is almost like dumping it onto their online service to a certain degree. Even though this is a big announcement, and it may be that this is their push to try and legitimize their outlet, it just feels like, really, this is what Trek is.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Well, no. Well, be careful though, because at the same time, this is now the third time that they're trying to use Star Trek as a push for a network vehicle. Prior to Star Wars success, it was slated to start the Paramount Network in the late 70s before they decided to switch it over to a movie franchise. Then you had Voyager start up UPN, and eventually Deep Space Nine migrated over to there as well. And now this is potentially starting up a sort of an online network a bit. So Star Trek has been brought out to do this in the several times in the past, and usually successfully. So you know, so it might be there. You know, remember when Next Generation was syndication only, and that Deep Space Nine started off the same way, but then Voyager started, you know, the UPN network, and while it's morphed and changed and merged, it did start that network and brought it in money to keep running for a long time. So, you know, the eyes are there if they do it well, so knock on wood, they will.
I suppose that's true. All right, well, let's go ahead then, and unless, Edmund, you had any other thoughts on this?
Nope, not yet.
Okay. I do hope it's ship-based, though, for this.
Well, and there's also the people who are a little bit worried because they, you know, with some of the people that are apparently behind it, they are also connected right now to the Abrams version of Star Trek, and they're a little bit worried that, oh, it's just going to be an extension of that, which is kind of logical, if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, especially when you consider like the Marvel Universe doing Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the movies, that they do sort of want a cohesive experience. So I wish it wasn't, I expect it to be. So.
Yes, well, that's the problem is that, you know, just the fact that that's an issue, I guess, to me is a little bit of an irritation, but whatever the case may be. Moving on to ABC, it seems like, here's some interesting shakeups going on here. The Muppets is previously mentioned that it had been extended for the rest of its first season, but there's some shakeups behind the scenes. The showrunner, co-creator, and executive producer Bob Kuschel has exited the show, and Gallivant's Kristen Newman is in talks to take over the position. Further, the show will enter hiatus following the 10th episode in order to prepare for a quote-unquote soft reboot in the spring.
So they'll get things started in the spring. Okay.
Yep. But they're going to light the lights. Despite that pickup, the report says the show's return from its winter hiatus is going to be treated almost like a relaunch. Even though the ratings are pretty good for Tuesday nights, it's the highest rated new show among adults 18 to 49. ABC is holding the show to higher standards due to the long-standing popularity of the characters, even though they were off the air for decades. Further, the studio has concerns about the creative direction. So yes, if they do strike the deal with Newman, she'll executive produce the project alongside many current people on the list. So the current direction of the Muppets has led to some criticism and some feedback, I guess, and then backlash. Haha. Yes, you were going to say, Gary. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh no, it's a really hard show to capture because at least the original show had such a way of being both kid-friendly and witty enough that the adults weren't bored. And as I watch this show, it feels like it drifted a little bit more too much into the adult range, and sort of the all-ages aspect of it was lost. And I'm assuming that's been at least that's been the complaints that I've heard. And people want something, I don't know if wholesome's quite the right word I'm looking for, but they want something that isn't quite as harsh as what we've been seeing in the last few episodes of this series. So I'm hoping they can find it, but I can understand that it's a hard thing to do, and I don't necessarily hold it against anyone that they can't capture the magic, because I don't think it's an easy thing.
No, I think that certainly there's been a lot of opinions back and forth on this one, but and we've mentioned it even as recently as last week with when Bronstein was here. But you know, there are some people that are certainly kind of taking this midlife crisis angle that they've started with kind of enjoying it and running with it. And then there are the people that really did not want it to go there. And I think that part of it is that at least for some of the adults in the audience, it's such a nostalgia thing that the idea that it's going to hit them right between the eyes of middle age, I don't think they were expecting that. And I don't think they appreciated it at all. And as you said, the further that you stray in that direction with the comedy, the harder it is for someone who's younger to really appreciate it. And it almost becomes inappropriate at sometimes, certainly from a certain point of view. So, we've been watching it here, and I feel like, yes, I understand what they mean about the creative direction. I think that they could have done a lot of things with that idea that they really haven't been doing. And some of the bits come across as a bit morose and almost like, I don't know. Melancholy isn't quite the word I'm looking for, but jaded certainly is a word I might use. And I don't think that's exactly what they want. I think they want something that's going to capture that kind of whimsical humor that was also part of the equation. But at any rate, that's it then for the traditional networks. We are then going to move into cable. And Edmund, I know I'm excited about this next piece.
We have heard from BBC One that they are going to do a TV adaptation of the Philip Pullman, His Dark Materials trilogy. This would be from the former Doctor Who producers, Julie Gardner and Jane Tranter. This would be an initial 8-part adaptation. Will be, of course, produced in Wales, like all of the best BBC dramas seem to be nowadays, is actually the first production to come out of Gardner and Tranter's new production company, Bad Wolf. I'm just trying to see here. Certainly, of course, this was the first book had been famously or infamously in some quarters adapted as a movie. Did not do well enough to continue with the expected film trilogy, but I think given the size and density of these stories, the idea of them having a little bit more room to expand on TV makes quite a bit of sense. I'm definitely looking forward to this.
Yeah, I mean, I remember being rather disappointed by the fact that the Golden Compass movie never took off, and there wasn't going to be adaptation beyond that. Just the sheer amount of money and talent that they threw behind that, it would have been a lot of fun to see what they could have done with the other two books of the trilogy. And those first 8 episodes will probably capture roughly the same timetable as what the first book is. So, yeah, It'll be interesting to see what they can do with it. I mean, considering just what happened with, I think you might have even mentioned it, the Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell miniseries. Mm-hmm. If they go along the same lines.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's good news. This little bit here is coming up is, I don't know if it's good news or bad news.
Yes.
I guess it depends on how you look at it and whether or not you feel like, hey, if they're going to do it, they might as well do it right. Well, Twin Peaks has been now officially delayed until 2017. So it's not that whole I'll see you again in 25 years line from the original series. It's quite going to match up, but it's going to be close enough.
Yeah,
far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, although I think given the issues earlier this year with Lynch leaving and then coming back and the uncertainties around that, this did not surprise me. Let's put it this way: I won't say I expected it, but it does kind of make sense. They might feel they need a little bit more time to get things together.
How many more years do I have to go to find out if Diane ever got a promotion? Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, she might be in fact in charge of the whole thing by now, but. Still make a damn fine cup of coffee. It has had a bumpy road, Edmund, you're right. And certainly as recently as this past April, we weren't even sure that the thing was going to happen. So, I mean, that's where it really gets into logical delays at this point. So it's already been filming. So they've done stuff on location in Washington. Apparently they then moved to California where they're going to be shooting until next May. So they've got a lot of shooting to do, and then they've got to figure out how many episodes it actually turns out to be, and then they've got to kind of edit it down in post-production and everything else. And so, yeah, 2017 sounds rather likely and even a little ambitious from this point. But there we are. It is delayed officially. Gary, a little bit of happy news for the undead.
Yes. They're still undead. What we're actually talking about is zombies, but not the zombies you might first want to think about. I'm talking about, of course, about the sci-fi series Z Nation. It's been recently announced that they have been renewed for season 3. Their time slot on sci-fi at 10 p.m. on Fridays has been doing really well for them. They've been averaging about 1.5 million viewers a week, which is really good numbers for sci-fi. So they announced that they are renewing it for the third season for 15 one-hour episodes. With most of the cast returning to reprise their roles. Season 2 will be wrapping up at the end of November, and we don't have a release date for Season 3 yet, but they are committed to it.
Hmm.
And it's been fun. My kids enjoy watching it. I view it as a much tamer version of Walking Dead without some of the psychological damage or horror that Walking Dead releases. So it's the... I'll have to say family-friendly zombie show to watch. But yeah, it doesn't deal with some of the heavier material that Walking Dead does, so it's something that the family can watch with only minor trepidation.
Yeah, I've seen a little bit of the promo stuff for it, and it just doesn't quite hit it for me, but I can definitely understand how if someone was looking for, you know, that flavor without the trauma of The Walking Dead, yeah, this might do it. All right, well then, moving on from cable into movie news. And Gary, I think you're up first on this one, too.
Oh, yes, and I was really thrilled to see this announcement because I hadn't heard anything that was in the works previously. But what we're talking about is the $6 Billion Man is going to be released through Mark Wahlberg's production company along with the Weinstein Brothers. The $6 Billion Man, which we all know from the classic $6 Million Man TV series with Lee Majors and based on the novel Cyborg by Martin Caden, which is really a good book if you get a chance to read it, of course, follows the story about Steve Austin, who gets into a bad accident and is rebuilt as a bionic man. They are looking the script has been written already, and as we are recording this, they should have started filming back in September, and this is set for a holiday 2017 release. And I'm curious to see what they can do with it. Of course, technology's improved drastically, and it's not quite the Terminator, but you know, I guess for people who like that sort of robot type of action, I guess we're going to see a little bit of that with the different cyborg attachments, and hopefully it'll have all the fun gadgets, not only arms and legs, but also the bionic eye, of course. So I'm looking forward to this. This is a property that's really sat fallow for a long time now, and I think they could do good work with it, especially in this modern age as everyone's starting to get different types of implants and hip replacements and stuff like that. I think it bears revisiting. Are you guys looking forward to it? Anybody big fans run around when you're a kid going?
Oh, absolutely. and yes, yeah, certainly, as you were saying, Gary, I mean, in this current age where people are having debates about becoming transhumans and what it would mean to even upload yourself into various cyberspaces. This certainly is a topic that is ripe for discussion. I'm kind of assuming this is that this particular movie probably will be more action oriented in the spirit of the original, not necessarily getting into all of those philosophical and social implications, but certainly an updated $6 billion man with current FX could be quite a bit more satisfying than that ching 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 in the slow motion. So.
Now I want to see what happens when they don't increase the budget for inflation, and it's got to be what you can get for $6 million these days. That's what I want to see happen. Is it's not quite what it was before.
Well, we're assuming action, but there was a lot of quote spy things about the series as well, and maybe perhaps they might want to go in that vein. So I'm curious where it's going to go.
Now, I think that it needs to be some kind of strange existential story. Let's do Ex Machina $6 million man style. Or $6 million man Ex Machina style. There you go.
I don't want the bionic parts talking to him. That's all I'm asking.
Okay.
Please, though. Conversations with his elbow.
Yeah, well, now that you bring up Ex Machina, I mean this could provide us with, if they want to do a sequel, the Bionic Woman could provide us with an answer for where she wound up.
Perfect. See, someone's getting it. Now, see, I really think it needs to be done, French style, where, yes, Gary, the bionic elbow is contemplating whether or not it exists on its own or only as part of, Steve Majors or whatever. So,
yes, what is their contribution?
Yes. What is their, are they only part of the whole or do they exist on and of themselves? Yes, it'll be a half hour of inner monologue, David Lynch Dune style. Or not. I mean, it could just be a straight-up action sequence. Who knows? Let's move on, then, to talking about ways of doing films that are a little bit outside of the box. Well, we'd all expect that the Deadpool writers are going to do something a little bit different. And yes, indeed, Deadpool, as he does in the comics very often, is going to be breaking the fourth wall in the film. Apparently, according to Deadpool screenwriters Rhett Reiss and Paul Wernick, they told Collider that the film will indeed break the fourth wall. For years, the character has been addressing the reader, sometimes the writer, with his opinions of the plot. So stuff like that is going to be happening in the film. They have their fun with the Wolverine movie, how Deadpool was portrayed, yet they completely disregarded it and done it hopefully better than it was done in that other film. The comics have led the way, so they're just going to basically follow that, where he's kind of strangely omniscient, but not quite. So while maintaining Deadpool's understanding that he's a fictional character, the writers decided not to go as far with the mental instability that has become a feature of his comic book counterpart. Not so much the hearing voices or the schizophrenia or any of that, but he is in a bit of, I like this, a highly militarized shame spiral.
Yes,
yes, that's what I want to see. Not pushing him into complete and utter sheer insanity, but somewhere in between. There you go. I like that. Highly militarized. I'm thinking that he and Hanji from Attack on Titan need to get together or something, but that's just me. All right, Edmund, why don't you go ahead? This piece just annoyed me.
Well, as some of you may remember from a few years ago, of course there was an American remake of the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo movie, which of course had already had a rather good Swedish adaptation, but Sony went with redoing it with Daniel Craig and Rooney Mara, and unfortunately it didn't quite become the big blockbuster they hoped, and kicking off the full Millennium Trilogy. However, they have decided to come back to the series, but they're not going to adapt the second or third novels. They are actually going to jump directly to The Girl in the Spider's Web, which is the newest novel, which, of course, was written not by Stieg Larsson, since he sadly passed away, of course. I do remember when I haven't read The Girl in the Spider's Web, but I know the reaction to it was a little mixed. Although they weren't necessarily stepping on any toes here. I mean, Larsson didn't intend the novels as a trilogy. He did leave the third one open to further adventures. It does just seem a little odd that not only are they jumping books, but they have also decided to recast the roles again. Apparently, it's not that surprising, but Daniel Craig and Rooney Mara had rather pricey contracts to begin with, and basically guarantees of pay raises if and when they ever return to the series. So Sony has decided to take its checkbook elsewhere and find some other people to move into those iconic roles. This does seem like an odd decision in terms of something that didn't quite do what they wanted the first time, so now they're going to try and do it, with the material that's not considered quite as good and more on the cheap. So, not sure how much we should look forward to this, but I guess we will see down the road.
Hmm. Yeah, I wish they had just stuck with their guns, but I don't know. And I don't know what the kind of perception is of the quality of the that book, the fourth novel, I guess, is. I don't have anything necessarily against it. If the author dies, if they get somebody quality in to do further adventures, that's fine. But yeah, I'm just a little bit wary of the fact that they are rebooting in the... I don't know. Why not just... I don't know. It leaves a little bit of a bad taste in my mouth, but there we are. Moving on then to some adaptation. Another adaptation here. So the Witcher movie, there is a Witcher movie in the works for 2017. This is based on the uber popular, and believe it or not, in Europe, this thing is huge. And there is a game series here in the, you know, internationally that has been pretty big. The third game coming out recently this year and got pretty high accolades. Well, the film is based on Polish fantasy series The Witcher, and there it's in the works for a 2017 release. It just says here the adaptation is being produced by the Season Daniel Company, the same studio behind the Mummy franchise and Platige Films. The books and the games follow Geralt of Rivia, one of the fantasy world's titular monster hunters. The series is known for its dark, R-rated brand of fantasy adventure, and I think anyone who's familiar with the games would probably agree with that. So there we are. So let's see, moving on from there, I guess, Gary, this last bit of movie news.
Disney can't quite seem to kick the princess habit. Disney has announced that they've bought the rights to Anastasia, which is actually owned by Fox, actually, and they've bought the rights to it, which means now Anastasia, well, of course, already being a princess, is now a Disney princess. Disney has some big plans for this, besides a live-action movie, which they're planning to release sometime in 2017. They're also planning a Broadway musical for this. They had talked about something along these lines a few years ago, but nothing ever came of it. But I guess they never gave up hope, and they're moving forward with it now. They've been churning out some of these live-action princess movies now, or at least they're taking the cartoon characters and rolling them into live-action with some successes, such as Maleficent, and then others not so much, like Cinderella. So I don't know if they've quite hit on the formula for themselves yet, but they are going to keep moving forward with these types of things. I suppose it's nice because I guess perhaps people will get somewhat of a history lesson along the lines to know that there actually was an Anastasia, even though I accept that she never saw a teenager. So we'll have to see how it develops. But I mean, they have the money and a lot of the formulas in place to make this happen. So we'll probably see it sooner than later.
Yeah, I don't know with these live action films from Disney anymore. Like I said, they seem to announce a new one every week, but they don't seem to be doing particularly well at the box office. So I don't know.
Yeah, we'll have to see. But they have the connections, the setups, and everything. Pretty much to dump a story, into different buckets to make everything happen. You know, I can think of few studios that can say, oh yeah, we're just going to make a Broadway show out of this. You know, I can't imagine any other major network that could, entertainment system or whatever conglomerate that can roll that off their tongue. And you have no doubt that it will happen and happen in short order. So, I mean, they, you know, they have their machine well run, and if they can get a good story, then it'll stick. And if it's not, then it won't. So we'll have to see. But I agree that I think by and by they've been somewhat disappointing in both for us and them, and that they have not gotten that big blockbuster that they're hoping for.
Hmm. Yeah, not since, well, what was the, I guess, yeah, they haven't really gotten any of them, have they? But not to the degree they want, let's put it that way. I don't want to give the wrong impression that some of those films were creatively quite good, but they didn't quite financially hit what they wanted them to.
Well, yeah, true, but, you know, it's hard to argue when something makes over $50-plus million to call it a disaster.
they want
what I guess now is Frozen level. I guess you can use as the yardstick, and they have not hit it in a while, so.
Hmm. So yes, that having been said, we can move on to casting news. Okay.
Ooh.
That's
a rough day.
Yeah, that almost took it on the chin right there. All right.
That's all right. So, the cat survived.
Okay, that's the important part. We've got some news about potentially Nicole Kidman coming on into a new role in the new DC Universe with a role in Wonder Woman. So while, you know, we don't know everything about what's going on with Wonder Woman as a film, and apparently Nicole Kidman has signed at the dotted line, which is actually a pretty big deal as far as getting a big name into the film, since Gal Gadot is still, in many respects, considered to be unproven. But at this point in her career, Kidman's one of those actresses who can do almost anything she wants. So her coming onto this film speaks volumes, not just for Jenkins as the director and her vision, but also the script. It suggests that the character she's going to play is a fairly significant role. And some people are speculating that it could be Wonder Woman's mother, Queen Hippolyta. So
that would make a lot of sense.
It would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, that would work.
All right. And our next bit of casting news. Edmund, this is interesting stuff.
Yes. Duncan Jones, who has, of course, in recent years moved far beyond being just David Bowie's son, and with his various directing projects, starting with Moon, but also the upcoming Warcraft film adaptation. But his long gestating passion project, as they put it, Mute, now has Paul Rudd and Alexander Skarsgård attached to star. They will be in Berlin 40 years from today, where Berlin has become a roiling city of immigrants, where East crashes against West in a science fiction Casablanca. Skarsgård will be playing Leo Beiler, a mute bartender, hence the title Mute, I presume, has one reason and one reason only for living there, and she has disappeared. But his search of naturally takes him deep into the city's underbelly, leading him to an odd pair of American surgeons led by Mr. Rudd. I was aware of this project. This is actually the first time I've actually read a description, and this is getting me very excited. I'm feeling, especially with Duncan Jones creating all this, I'm feeling echoes of Brazil. I'm also thinking about China Miéville's The City in the City, in terms of clashing communities that happen to be right next to each other. This project does seem to be coming along nicely, and just trying to see here if they if they had any sort of release date, but he has been trying to make it for over 12 years, and he still has to wrap post-production on Warcraft, we're looking I would say probably at least a couple of years down the line, but sounds like something to look forward to.
Yes, indeed. Yes, I kind of like his way of doing things, so I want to see what this turns into, if this is one of his little passion projects. I wonder if it'll be 3.5 hours long, like we predict all passion projects will be. But we don't know. Gary, this one's right up your alley.
Oh, it sure is. The next bit of casting news we're talking about is on the show Supergirl. they're continuing to add cast members to the ensemble, and the latest one is Emma Caulfield has been signed to play the character Cameron Chase in on the show. Cameron's background was she was actually introduced in the comic books as in Batman, actually, as a DEO operative who would investigate various things. And she also has an uncanny power to, at least in the comic books, to dampen metahuman powers when she feels threatened. And she's being introduced, and I imagine with Supergirl's tight liaisons with the DEO through her adopted sister or stepsister, being sort of run by them, so to speak, that I'm not sure if Caulfield's character of Chase will become a handler of sorts or some sort of friendly rival. But regardless, this obviously sort of points to the direction that the show is going to start leaning a little bit, at least in my opinion, that the DEO will continue to be a major portion of the show. So they're just bringing in some more characters, and I guess we'll see perhaps a little bit less of her sister, since she seemed to be the sort of main DEO go-between. So I guess, you know, we'll have to see how the mix goes.
Mm. Yes, indeed. And we'll be talking more about Supergirl later in the week, as far as what we think of this start to the series. And finally, when it comes to casting news, we have a little bit of, we were talking about live-action films from Disney, and this is another one. Universal and Working Title have found its Little Mermaid star in kick-ass actress Chloe Moretz. According to Variety, Moretz has been the frontrunner for quite a while, despite director Sofia Coppola's purported disinterest in bringing her on board. That said, Coppola has since left the project over creative differences, which I'm guessing opened the door back up for Moretz. Yes, it didn't want to make an official announcement, the studio, until a scriptwriter was settled upon. As such, this casting report comes coupled with the news that Love Actually's Richard Curtis is in talks to write the film. The Little Mermaid will serve as a live-action retelling of Hans Christian Andersen's classic story, though details on how closely it's going to tie to the source material and prior adaptations have yet to be revealed. So I'm guessing that this is not supposed to be a live-action Disney film, looking at all this information, but rather a rival to Disney film in some way, shape, or form. Not sure how to take that. But anyway, apparently they're going to inject a little kick-ass into it. Make it a hit, girl.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yeah, although the combination of Kick-Ass and Richard Curtis just doesn't quite gel for me.
maybe not. All right, and I think that we have as one of our last little bits here for this episode, Gary, a little bit of sad news.
Yes, and it is. We've reached our memoriam section, and while we don't look forward to ever having names on this list, it is fair to take note of people who have influenced or entertained us. And the person we're talking about now is a guy you probably have never ever seen, but you know his work. I'm talking about George Barris. His claim to fame, of course, was he was the creator of the classic television series Batmobile. He was in charge of the Batmobile, the Batboat, the Bat Motorcycle. He was also in charge of the car from the Munsters, as well as, to bring it just a little bit slightly more modern but still ancient at this point, he was also responsible for Kit as well from Knight Rider. So he started off hot-rodding cars in California in the late 50s, early 60s, and finally got a job starting to do custom cars for rich people, and that finally rotated into him being able to start designing cars for motion pictures and television series, and it was a job he loved to do. He actually held on to that original Batmobile for several decades and only had recently sold it back in 2014 for over $600,000. So he definitely did love his work, and was a very happy man. He did pass on from cancer. His son notified people that had occurred, and he was a man who loved doing what he did, and we can all be thankful for any time you see some of these vehicles, it was him. So thank you, George.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, in my case, I mean, my toy car version of the Batmobile was one of my treasured possessions as a kid. It was that because especially since they did make it basically tricked out with all sorts of little bits and pieces that did actually move, and even the missiles that shot out the back. Even though, of course, you invariably wound up losing the missiles at some point during your childhood.
Yes, we did.
and I also love the little note here that currently he had been driving around in a Toyota Prius. this. But of course, with a gold paint job with emerald green metallic accents and doors that opened upwards like a Lamborghini with the gull wings. So he was, even in his everyday life, was just always fiddling and customizing cars.
Very good, very good. All right, well, that is it for the news for this week. It means that when we go into the next episode, we are going to go knee-deep, hip-deep, I would say even neck-deep into episodic discussion. There's quite a lot to get into. And then later in the week, we're going to have a little bit of an open topic and see what happens from there. But until then...
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates, but let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.